Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. Hi and welcome. I'm Sima Shapiro. Today we'll be talking with two surrogates, one of whom is someone who works within the field of surrogacy, about the different types of surrogacy, how to do it, when to do it, who does it. We'll call this Surrogacy 101. Along the way, hopefully we'll answer many of your questions about this burgeoning route to parenthood. Lisa Whippler is a 3-time gestational surrogate and 2-time egg donor. She has been working in the field of surrogacy since 1996. Currently, she works for Growing Generations as a surrogate admission specialist and specializes in the matching process. Surrogacy has been Lisa's passion for almost 20 years. She feels that it's an amazing gift for one family to give another. A former Marine, Lisa has been married to her husband, John, a retired Marine, for 23 years and has 2 sons. In her spare time, she and her husband run a small, volunteer, nonprofit dog rescue. Bev Zarfas was born and raised in York, Pennsylvania. Married to her high school sweetheart for 31 years, she's been blessed with a daughter, 28, and son, 26. Bev has been involved with surrogacy since the year 2000. Her initial inspiration came from a coworker who was dealing with infertility. After much research, and later at the age of 36, she found an agency and began the surrogacy process for 4 families, 2 of which were successful. Determining that for many, the cost of using an agency is just not possible, she then proceeded with a private arrangement. Her last surrogate baby was born in 2010 at age 46. She says, "Being a surrogate is a blessing beyond words. I have had the privilege and honor to carry a precious baby for 3 amazing families. It has always been my passion to help others and make a difference and change lives." She considers these families to be her own family. So welcome, Bev and Lisa.
Hello.
Hi.
Lisa, let's start with you. Tell me a little bit about the types of surrogacy available and which one is most commonly used.
Well, there are typically 2 types of surrogacy. You have traditional, and this means that the carrier is also the donor. So she donates her own egg and is artificially inseminated by the intended father's sperm. This can be done with a home insemination kit. It can be done in a clinic. One of the benefits of that is a lower cost, so it's really not as commonly used these days, though. The other more common way that you see surrogacy done is called gestational surrogacy. And that's where the surrogate is solely the carrier. If the intended parent cannot use their own eggs, then they usually get a third-party donor. That is also what most couples find most comforting, knowing that the surrogate does not have the genetic tie to the baby, and that's why it's more common these days.
And when you say third-party donor, how would that operate?
Well, a lot of egg donor agencies exist now, although some families can also use a family member so that they're shared genetic, or you can reach out to one of the donor companies who do nothing but provide donors. So just like with a surrogate applying to become a surrogate, you have donors who apply to become an egg donor.
Are there any other methods that are used to achieve surrogacy?
Those are your general 2. You have a traditional surrogate and you have a gestational surrogate. And then the third part of that would be the donor.
And why would someone use or need a surrogate?
There's many reasons why someone would use a surrogate. If you're dealing with, you know, an intended mother, maybe she can't carry herself. She's had some reason that would preclude her from carrying a pregnancy. Maybe she can donate eggs that are viable, so that having a surrogate carry for them still means that they maintain the same genetic. We've had women who, for instance, have had cancer. They may have had other medical conditions that pregnancy would be deadly for them. Another reason that we see frequently for needing a gestational surrogate are gay clients. We have a lot of gay clients that come to us, and we also have single dads that come to us who, all of whom are ready to become parents, and this is their only way to do it.
This is just a fascinating window into a world that I think that many people don't know or know much about. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
And let's talk a little bit more about who would become a surrogate. Who does choose to become a surrogate, and how many of them are there in this country? Do you have any idea what differentiates them, and is it purely profit? Is it altruism?
Well, not all women qualify to become a surrogate. It does take a special kind of person. I think that it's okay for someone who's interested in surrogacy to have monetary gain on her list of top 10 reasons why she wants to pursue surrogacy, but it definitely cannot be in the top five. The reasons for that is that surrogacy is a very long process. It takes several months to even be accepted to become a surrogate. Then there's medical screening, psychological screening. You know, there's shots. Most women do not realize that an in vitro fertilization cycle means tens of hundreds of shots before you can even become pregnant, and then continued shots until you're about 8 to 10 weeks gestation. So it's not an easy way to make money. Add on to that, you have, you know, 9 months of pregnancy, delivery. So definitely a surrogate has to have other motivations. Some reasons a surrogate might be declined who are interested in becoming a surrogate would be their BMI. You have to be within a certain height and weight for most reproductive clinics to accept you. Surrogates have to be financially stable. You can't be on any form of government assistance. So this can't be one of your motivations in terms of that. You have to be stable. You can't be someone who moves a lot in and out of relationships. We do have a lot of single moms, which is great because as long as they have a good support system, they can continue. You have to have a good pregnancy history. So there's many factors that roll into what makes a good qualified surrogate. Usually across the country, less than 5% of women who want to be a surrogate actually qualify to do so. So that probably means there's maybe, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 surrogates across the country at any given time. We personally take less than 1% of people who apply to our program. Between 2004 and 2008, the only study that I really could find was up to 5,000 children were born through a surrogacy agreement. And that's because a lot of clinics just don't put the statistics out there. So we don't really know in reality how many, but that was a study that was done between those 4 years.
Is there a reason for not giving those stats, airing those stats? Is there a reason for not letting the public know?
Well, I think for some families, it's privacy. You know, it's a really private thing for a lot of families. So I think that might be one factor. I think that, you know, having a governing body that collects the information might be another. I mean, there's just no real official tracking.
I guess that would lead me into the next question. Are there federal and state regulations surrounding surrogacy?
There is. The problem is that each state is different in their laws regarding surrogacy. Each state we work with, which is about 30, will differ on how the paternity judgment is received, whose names can go on the birth certificate and things like this. So it's really important if people are attempting to pursue a surrogacy arrangement that they really find a lawyer that is familiar with family law and specifically third-party reproduction, because it depends on the state that the surrogate is going to deliver where the paternity judgment is entered. And if it is not a surrogacy-friendly state or even county, they may have difficulty finalizing their parental rights.
And do the state regulations vary from A to Z, or are they pretty much the same except for these nuances?
No, they definitely vary from A to Z. The legal realm of surrogacy even changes and fluctuates day to day, week to week, because all it takes is one judge in one county to make an unfavorable ruling toward an intended parent getting their names on the birth certificate that can alter the entire state.
And I'm guessing that the legalities over surrogacy also extend to the fact that there must be some surrogates who do wish to keep the baby. Is that the kind of legalities that might be pursued?
Well, frankly, that seems to be something that comes up all the time, and I'm sure Bev can attest to this, but I've been involved in surrogacy since 1996, and I have never personally known through my involvement anyone who has tried to keep the baby when they have entered into the agreement in the proper way. And what I mean by that is a surrogate who has gone through the proper steps of screening, which would include medical screening as well as full psychological screening and proper interviews, is way less likely to have any concerns or issues, especially after the birth. So I don't think that the legalities, they're certainly there to protect both parties, but I don't think that they're specifically set to protect an intended parent from a surrogate trying to keep their baby. When the reality is, most surrogates that I personally know and have screened and have fielded are more concerned about the end of the day, the intended parents choosing not to take the baby home, and then them having another child to raise.
So we've just addressed briefly the issue of the business of surrogacy. Let's let's turn our sights to more about the spirituality of it all. So many women who choose to become surrogates consider that this calling is more like a mission. So, Bev, let's bring you in at this point. Talk to me a little bit about the mission of being a surrogate.
Oh, absolutely. When I first even thought about becoming a surrogate, I had a coworker that was going through terrible infertility, and we would just cry every time that she had a pregnancy that failed. And at that time, I had two young children, and you know, my heart just broke because I couldn't imagine not being able to have those children. So then the internet came along, and I heard a story, and I did some research, and I started to learn a little bit more about being a surrogate. And I came home to my husband, and I looked at him, and I handed him a brochure, and I said, you know, I really want to do this because it's just something that I feel that I need to do to be able to help a family become a family who really wants to, because I can't imagine being told I couldn't become a parent.
And Lisa, yourself?
Yeah, I was the same way. I was a little bit different. My husband and I were a young military family, and we moved from North Carolina to California. And I had been reading the back of a parenting magazine trying to find some people to connect with. We were so far away from any place we'd ever lived. And I saw an ad in the back of a parenting magazine that talked about becoming a surrogate mother and egg donor, which sparked the discussion between my husband and I. What would we have done if we had not been able to have our sons? And called and got more information, because at that point I just didn't understand how many women and families in general were struggling to become parents. And that's how, you know, what really got us started in it.
Talk a little bit about the spiritual aspect. For either of you, is there a spiritual aspect to becoming a surrogate, Bev?
I know some people actually say, you know, the negative aspect of it, oh, how can you do this? You know, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. But that's where I feel that I have been put in this place to provide this help to another family that needs it. So I feel it's a blessing, and I've always felt that way. So I feel I've been put in that place for a specific reason to help that specific couple.
And Lisa?
For me, I think there certainly was in the beginning. I just felt like I was blessed enough to have two healthy sons and a family, and I was young and pregnancy was easy, and I thought it would be just an amazing blessing to be able to help someone have what we had.
And how is it that this has turned into a passion and then a vocation for you?
Well, for me, I actually found what I was looking for to start with. So originally I was looking in the back of that parenting magazine for some people to connect with, you know, young moms, parents. And in actuality, that's what I found with surrogacy. I really found when I would go to our monthly support group meetings on Saturday that the women that were there also becoming surrogates were exactly like me. I mean, they may have been teachers or nurses or stay-at-home moms or, you know, in other aspects of jobs, but we all were moms. The majority of us were wives. We all had children, and we all felt this need to do something greater than ourselves. And so in surrogacy, I also found that connection with other moms that I had been looking for. And I found after those support group meetings, I wanted to spend more time with these women. So we started scheduling outside time, outside of surrogacy meetings, to get together. And then, you know, a job opportunity opened up within the field, and it just set me on the path of being involved in surrogacy all these years. There's just nothing more amazing than hearing a couple struggle and then at the end seeing them become parents and knowing that you played even a small role in that. There's just nothing you can compare it to.
And absolutely, Lisa, as you said, too, we've become friends. I mean, I started it since 2000, and here 15 years later, I am still in contact with surrogates that I met 15 years ago. We live all over the country. Our lives are completely different. I mean, yes, we have that commonality of, yes, we're parents, yes, we're surrogates. Most of us are married or whatever, but we can be in totally different vocations otherwise, but the bond of surrogacy is still there, and we're still in touch, and it does. It just creates a whole other family for you.
We're talking today with two surrogates who are very familiar with the field of surrogacy, and we're calling this Surrogacy 101. Who does it? When do they do it? How do they do it? So let's move forward. Before I want to ask more commonly asked questions, I would like to understand the emotionality of it. I think that for many women, being pregnant produces a huge amount of emotions to begin with, and now you have a couple who themselves are already emotional about what must be a very painful journey, I would guess, in many cases. Lisa, can you talk to me a little bit about the emotionality behind all of this?
Sure. So I think the best way to describe it for me would be in the delivery room for my first surrogacy. So my husband is this big 6'3", 250-pound Marine, and we're in the delivery room. It's myself, my husband, and the intended mom and the intended father, and I'm getting ready to give birth to their son. And the dad is standing up by my head trying to be respectful of the process because, you know, with delivery, you're sort of everything's out there for everyone. They're coming in and out. There's so much going on. And right at the moment the baby is starting to be born, my husband physically reached his hand across my stomach to the dad and said, "Come down here, Dad. You only have one chance to see your son be born." And 20 years later, it gives me chill bumps to tell the story because it is, in that moment, it is such an emotional thing to know and to be able to visually see the look on these parents' face when they see their child for the first time and to know that you participated in that joy. I mean, the emotional feelings are just really difficult to describe. I'll never be able to describe it. And I remember just a couple hours later, my husband went home to check on our sons because that's, of course, what I was worried about. Her husband was gone downstairs to do some paperwork, and she was sitting over in the corner of the room with her son. And I just remember feeling like I shouldn't be there at that moment because it was such a precious moment between her and her son and the time that they were spending together. And you almost feel out of body that you know you helped create it, and at the same time, the joy and all the emotion you have was going into making that family, and there's that family sitting there. So, you know, there was never any sense of loss or any sense of giving a baby away. It was more of a sense of pride and accomplishment for completing what you had set out to do, and that is to create a family.
And Bev?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we can echo, every surrogate has stories from the births that are just amazing, and as you said, give you goosebumps all the time. I'll never forget with my first surrogate delivery. It was early. There had been snow. The couple had to drive in the snow for several hours to get to the hospital. And I said, "This baby isn't coming until they get here." And they arrived within a couple hours. She was born. And I'll never forget, I have a picture of my husband and the dad over in the corner, both with tears in their eyes. Mm. And those are the moments that you just, it, all those shots that you have to give, everything that you go through, you forget all of that. Because in that moment, when you see the joy in the face of the mom and the dad holding their baby is just absolutely incredible, and there's nothing that can take that away. It is just the most joyous time. You feel such a sense of accomplishment, and it's just something that all of us as surrogates, that's why we do it. That's why we're surrogates, is for that moment when you see them with their child for the first time, a child that is so wanted, so loved, and is going to be just making a big difference in that family.
I'm wondering what the reactions are from strangers or from your family and friends to your becoming a surrogate. Have you had positive, negative experiences, Lisa?
Absolutely. You know, there is a whole sort of stigma, if you will, around surrogacy in itself. Because when you say you're becoming a surrogate, of course, the first thing out of most people's mouth, or at least in their mind, is, well, you have to be doing it for the money. There's just no reason you would put yourself through carrying a baby for someone else and then giving, quote, a baby away unless there's financial motivation. So I think that automatically, just by saying, I'm going to be a surrogate, comes with that. I personally did have some issues with my own mother, who, even being a registered nurse, had difficulty absorbing and accepting the fact that I was going to carry a baby and give it away, even though she understood the genetic. I think that you just have to be able to know in your own heart and mind that this is definitely something you want to do, and the reasons why you want to do it, hopefully the main support people in your life, even though they may not understand, will accept and support you through the process. I think you also get a little pushback maybe from people who aren't going to be as vocal, such as teachers or kids' school. But, you know, I always advise my surrogates, it's all in how you tell people. You know, do you just put it out there, I'm a surrogate, or do you wait a few weeks until you know you're moving forward and you can present it as, you know, I'm carrying a baby for some good friends of mine? Or there's just varying ways to present it that alleviates some of that. But I think a lot of people do feel some pushback from people who just don't understand the process.
Bev, let's move on to what the process is like for you as a surrogate. Most commonly asked questions, I'd have to believe, are, is it hard giving the baby away?
Absolutely not.
And are you still in contact with the children or with the families?
Yes, I am very blessed to have a wonderful relationship with all three of my families. We are friends on Facebook, of course, so we share information there, but we talk, we email. I know if there's ever an issue, they're just part of the family. I know I could call them, and they would be there for my children as much as I would be there for theirs. They just were down at my son's wedding. One of the couples was able to make my son's wedding, and we are just truly family.
And at what point do you find that they let their children know how they've been born into this world, or do they?
I think it's an individual couple issue on how they do, but most of the couples, it's something that obviously when the child's young, they don't really understand it, but it's never really something that's been hidden from them. In my situation, we did photo albums, so they have photo albums of the entire pregnancy, and then I have a letter to each one of the children. So there's photo albums involved and pictures, and most times the family is aware of it also, so it's not something that typically is a secret. In my situation, it certainly wasn't, that they definitely know that. As far as the children understanding the process, they're still relatively young at 12, 10, and 5, so as much as they can understand at that level. But it is something that usually, it's not something that we broadcast when we come to visit. It's not like, oh, here comes your surrogate mom walking in the door. It's just, oh, here's our friends, you know, here's our friend Bev coming, and we spend time together.
And lastly, how did your husband feel about you carrying another person's baby?
He was very supportive. He was also always very nervous. You know, when you're pregnant with your own child, of course, you're very careful and, you know, you eat well and those kind of things. But when you're carrying a child for someone else, it's magnified by 100 times because you're not only taking care of that child, but you're taking care of it for another couple. And I can only imagine, you know, think back to when you had a child when it was young and you had to give a young child to a babysitter. Imagine your child being at a babysitter for 9 months and everything that caregiver, that surrogate does is going to be affecting your child. So we're always extra cautious and made sure that we were eating well and exercising and those kind of things. So he was very, very cautious about that, and we were always had that in the forefront of our minds on how our couple was going to feel about how we were taking care of their child.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have a funny, when we went to our class reunion, I was very pregnant with my first surrogate baby, and I could just tell some people I kind of had strange looks when they were at the reunion, and I go to find out that my husband's comment was, oh yeah, she's pregnant, but it's not mine. She went to New York and got pregnant, but we're dealing with it. It's okay.
Oh,
so that was the big joke of the class reunion until they figured out that, yes, I was a surrogate. What he said was true, but it was a little bit more planned than that. So we did
great.
Have a little fun with it. There were times when you do have to still have fun with it because it is unusual. It is different, but you can have some fun with it also.
Lisa, tell me a little bit about the matching process, just very briefly. How does that work?
Well, I think it's very important, but it does vary across the country in terms of if you're using an agency. Different agencies have different matching processes. But with us, what I think is pretty interesting and important is that we really try to match surrogate families with intended parents that do have the possibility to be a long-term relationship if it happens organically. So it, first and foremost, legality is involved. You know, we can't match an intended parent that needs specific legalities with a surrogate who is not in a very friendly state legally. But above and beyond that, some intended parents do have very specific requirements of the surrogate they're looking for. For instance, some parents may want someone who's a stay-at-home mom. Some parents might want someone who's married because they think they have that extra support. Some parents want a surrogate who have very specifics, like eat salmon once a week or don't drink caffeine, and relationship. You know, some surrogates might come into it saying, listen, I really would like the opportunity to have a good relationship with my intended parents. I want them to visit. I want to be involved. And you may have the opposite. You may have some intended parents who want to be supportive and involved, and after the birth of the baby, they're just not really sure. So there's a lot of variables involved in matching. I mean, it's kind of a mind game when it comes to doing it properly.
And when you're trying to match them, are you actually looking for like-minded temperaments, like-minded personalities, or do you use your intuition?
Well, I think that one of the benefits of being involved for 20 years is kind of getting to know people a little bit. And again, this goes back to working with an agency versus independently and picking your own surrogate. I think that it is important, although that is not an important factor that is placed as much as it should. For example, if I know one of my particular surrogates is very A-type, very organized, asks a lot of questions, makes a lot of lists, then she might be really great for an intended parent who is a little more anxious and a little more concerned about the process, because she's going to make them much more comfortable, that she's very organized and on top of things. So I do think that that is very important for me in terms of the matching process, both the temperaments of the surrogate and her family and the intended parents of theirs, as well as their expectations of the process itself in terms of relationship. And really one of the biggest things as well, and in addition to all of those, is everyone's thoughts and feelings on selective reduction, abortion, termination. Those things really have to be online with each other before anyone should proceed.
Yes. So, Lisa, just quickly, can you tell me some stats? How much does this cost? About how many surrogacies are undergone each year? Maybe how many surrogates there are? Just give me whatever stats you can offer the listener.
Okay. Even the CDC numbers don't tell us much. Out of about 100,000 or so IVF cycles that happen per year, surrogacy is reported to represent less than 1% of those cycles. And some of those cycles include repeat cycles for the same person. In terms of cost, if working with a family member, the IVF and legal costs could be around $50,000, because you're talking about altruistic surrogacy where the surrogate's not receiving compensation and you're keeping costs to a minimum. Working with a large agency, doing gestational surrogacy with an egg donor could run $150,000 or more. And that's just dependent on whether your egg donor is a paid donor, a known donor, the intended mom, if you're a gay couple and you know you need a third-party donor. Independent surrogacy can be cheaper than professional surrogacy, but it also includes you doing most of the coordination and foregoing some of the safety measures that an agency might otherwise require be in place. Professional surrogacy is generally $140,000 to $180,000 and really depends on the number of attempts it takes to become pregnant, which usually is a factor of the eggs, whether it's an intended mom, whether it's a third-party donor. Other factors influencing cost could include procedures that the parents intend to do, such as genetic testing on the embryos or the surrogate's personal expenses.
I believe that we have just touched the surface of this and could have gone a lot deeper, and I'm sorry we have run out of time. So, Bev, I do want to ask you, what final words would you like to leave the listeners today?
Just that surrogacy is a wonderful option for families that are having trouble conceiving and having a child of their own. When I became a surrogate, you know, my original goal, of course, was to have a child for a couple that they couldn't carry on their own. But what I have gotten out of it, both emotionally and psychologically, is far more than I ever anticipated. I now have extended family that I know will be part of my life forever, and it just totally has been a wonderful, amazing experience.
We've been talking today with two surrogates, one of whom has extensive experience in the field of surrogacy. Lisa Whippler can be found at growinggenerations.com. Bev Zarfos can be found on Twitter and Facebook. I want to thank you so much, Bev and Lisa, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And to you, the listener, we hope we've answered some of your questions about this growing and popular trend toward parenthood. And again, I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. Thank you so much for joining us. And until next time, I hope you take care.